Well, that's an interesting way. I want to tell you, Vimalakirti puppet show was at Green Gulch last week, and it's wonderful. It's so well done. It's a great story of Vimalakirti, who was the lay Zen master who scared everyone because of his incredible intellect and his incredible ability to cut through anybody's views. So please come. It's a little long for kids if you were thinking of children. We had it for the first, the children's program, but for the adults we were all enthralled and enjoyed it tremendously. So I highly recommend it. Thank you for that introduction. It's very interesting, and thank you for coming and welcoming me. And I am one of those anomalies. I am ordained. I am a priest. We didn't do nuns or priests in America. And my head is shaved quite often, and then it grows fast. And then I think, oh, this is kind of nice to have hair again. And then I realize when I think about hairdos, maybe how I should get it cut, I better shave it again. Because I'm a little caught. I'm a little caught by that appearance, by that idea of myself. And to go around in Marin County with a bald head is a little interesting for someone who didn't start to practice till they were 43. And a mother. I have two sons now, 32 and 29. That's always a surprise to me. That they're that old, or that I'm that old, I'm not sure which. And to live a very different life. So today, one of the things I found when I give public talks is, if I'm truthful, I'll talk about what I'm practicing with. Because I don't do it every week as the abbots and the abbesses do and the senior Dharma teachers, it's a good thing to come in with what's up right in front of you. So most of you know the Four Noble Truths and the last one of the Eightfold Path, and starting out with right view. And so today I thought, if I may, I would speak to you a little bit about right view. The first thing I think is a good idea is to think of the word right as open, not right as in right or wrong, but an open view. It's a very helpful way to open up the idea of these teachings. So what is a view? And I'm going to pay attention to my notes a little bit so I stay on course. And so what the noun use of what a nice view of the sky, we understand. The sky is pretty, it becomes a verb. And then the next part of what is a view, and now you say it does. It doesn't look like it's going to rain tomorrow on my picnic. If it does, I will be terribly upset. So you've now entered the realm of using a view charged with feelings or emotion. And that is the way, as I understand it, that the word view is used in this practice, when it is charged with a feeling or an emotion. This is where the trouble starts, and it, as you know, can go in many directions. It's a little hard without a podium, but it's okay. So if you'll excuse my head bobbing. The first view of the sky statement is a sight. Then the sight coupled with the desire or aversion produces a view as an attachment. That equals I like it, I don't like it, I don't know if I like it or not. So we're not going to concern ourselves today with the neutral view, but we are going to concern ourselves that the view is motivated by our emotional reactions to conditions. So how about an example? An example I think that's really good for all of us is road rage. And how that view goes into our mind and how much it controls our life. And I will tell a little story on myself. In Mill Valley, they have many of the little cutouts on the island so you can turn around and come back on the street. So right after the Whole Foods Market, there's one of those little cutouts, and then you can turn left again to go to the back way up to Green Gulch. Over on this side of the street, there is a video store, and then it's just to the left, so you're at an angle. This long Cadillac came out to come cut across the road, I think you know what I mean, to get into this, to go onto the street, and of course I was turning. And he really did cut, fortunately, neither one of us, he was going faster, but I wasn't. And I said, "You can't do that." And that's how I felt inside, "You can't do that." And he turned around and he said, "Lady," which of course endears you, "Lady, I've been doing this all my life." And I just kind of was stunned, but I was able to watch the incredible reactions, the incredible statements that I had going on in my head bone for the next 10 minutes about the idiot in the long 1966 Cadillac. It was a wonderful way, and this is where our views come in. And the subtle realms that cause us our suffering are innumerable. And we must pay attention if we'd like to possibly get into this thing called free from our suffering. To the subtleties of our mind that where our views become absolute or truths. And the other example I'd like to use is I am a pretty practical person. I have a lot of common sense. That's my view of myself. And I bring that view into the Dharma Center because I feel like there are a few there, my view is, that don't have a lot of common practical sense. And this manifests itself in the fact that right now my job is the physical plant manager. I take care of all of the septics, the water, which is off of a spring in a well, the houses, all of the maintenance of Green Gulch right now, with the exception of the farm and the garden, except if it's involved in the water. And the other thing I take care of is the automobiles. Well, getting the stickers for the cars is an ordeal at Green Gulch. And every single year we miss one car. And one year it cost us $1,200 to pay that late fine. So sure enough, there was one car that was missed, and I thought it was missed all the way. It was only missed part of the way. We didn't submit proof of insurance. And the reason is because this car is due on the 30th of April, and the insurance is renewed on the 1st of May. So it always has a problem, this particular vehicle. So I walked in to say, as I went through DMV and got this taken care of, and I went into the director and I said, "Okay, I have a solution to this," because you can't change the birth date of a vehicle registration. Did y'all know that? Here in California, no matter what the reason, they won't change its, quote, its birth date. So I had this very practical solution of how we could change it and incorporate it, and the director looked at me and said, "Well, that's just your perception. I don't see it that way." Because I, of course, my view said, we can't afford to keep having these $1,200, which we didn't this time, or $3,000 fines, and we need to have an administrator that just takes care of all of our permits. And he just kind of slid into it, and I just got those shoulders up, got those lips pursed tight, was all ready to take them on. About how stupid we are living in this Dharma. So anyway, it was my view. It caused my suffering. It separated me from anything, and I believed it to be a truth because I thought my perception was correct. I thought my practical... So my suffering came in. So I stayed fuming for a little bit and had that dialogue that goes on inside of one's head. So when we believe them to be truth and we make them solid, and as soon as we project our view onto the apparent world, we react to the force of our projections and we separate ourselves. Now, there's not one person in here that doesn't know this, but I'm inviting you to watch in the subtleties of your daily life how this comes up. However it is, the road rage, at work, cleaning the house, the spouse saying to the other spouse, if you would just do this, whatever the case may be. Because it is a recipe for creating suffering for ourselves and for the other people that are around us in our lives. As many of you know, in the Buddhist teaching, the 12 links of causation, there are the sense perceptions, I see you, the contact, from the contact feelings of I like it, I don't like it, then the craving or the grasping or the duality. Also, as I understand in this Buddhist teaching, the craving for existence or extinction, I love something, I want to hold on to it, I hate it, I want to get rid of it, and we've all had those experiences, right? I love it, I want to keep it. I love being thin, I want to be thin. I love having long hair, I want to hold. I mean, there's just innumerable examples that we can use, but that part where we hold on to something or we hate it so much we've got to get rid of it instead of turning into it to meet it. No clinging, no aversion, turning into it and meeting it as phenomena. Very, very difficult and very much at the core of Buddhist teachings as I understand it. The Dogen poem is, as we love the flowers, as we love them, the flowers die. Although we hate them, the weeds grow. In other words, we want our life to conform to our views and our feelings about things. The next question is usually, can we get along without having these views about ourselves and the world we live in? And of course the answer is no. Of course the answer is no. We are taught in Buddhist teaching that there are wholesome views and unwholesome views. An unwholesome view are those that create the attachment leading to the three poisons of greed, hate, and delusion. Greed, hate, and delusion. The wholesome views are those that help us see through our clinging. The precepts, most of the Buddhist teachings are about seeing through our clinging. Another wholesome view is one that helps us see the world as impermanent, insubstantial, meaning no self, and conditioned existence. The three marks of the conditioned existence in Buddhist teaching are impermanence, insubstantialities, and dissatisfaction or dukkha. A wholesome view is one that helps us see through our clinging. Another way of saying it is to make our opinions, understanding that we don't make them as an absolute truth. Actually being able to see it as an opinion. Here is an opinion, but that there's no truth to it. There's no absolute truth to it. One of the things that I think when we hold on to our views is they become our jails and we become locked into them. This has been a practice that's been very real for me of late, to see how many times my views have become my jailer and have prevented me from expanding into emptiness. And emptiness meaning the interrelatedness of all things. So that's kind of how I just did the part of how I see views, what's up for me, and what's been important. There's three books. I'm sorry, I left the other two books on the table that has some nice writings about views. One, of course, is Thich Nhat Hanh's. This is one of the newer books. It's not that new, The Heart of Buddhist Teachings. He talks a lot about views in here. The other one is The Emptiness of Emptiness. There's and David Comito has a wonderful book out on the 12 Links of Causation of Nagarjuna, for those of you that are interested, that really talks about these 12 links and how in views we have... I want to just read you a little bit. I have a poem. This is from Wendy Johnson, that she sent it to you. Heart and mind together in the present moment is the quote. I have to put my glasses on now. The first practice, I'd just like to read you this because he does write it very nicely. The first practice of the Noble Eightfold Path is right view. Right view is, first of all, a deep understanding of the Four Noble Truths. Our suffering, the making of our suffering, the fact that our suffering can be transformed, and the path of transformation. The Buddha said, right view is to have faith and confidence that there are people who have been able to transform their suffering. Shariputra added that right view is knowing which of the four kinds of nutriments that we have ingested have brought about what has come to be. Karma. Shariputra described right view as the ability to distinguish wholesome roots from unwholesome roots. In each of us, there are wholesome and unwholesome roots or seeds into the depths of our consciousness. If you are a loyal person, it is because the seed of loyalty is in you. But don't think that the seed of betrayal isn't also in you. And I think that that is the part of where we have to pay attention. If we're talking about financial, we say the asset and the liability, and how easily that asset can slip into our liability. And I think that this Buddhist teaching has been very significant for me in being able to watch where a wholesome view or an asset of a characteristic can slip in my life into the ultimate of suffering, of separating myself, because I believe something that manifests itself in my mind to be a truth or an absolute, and don't have the possibility of another view. And it's pretty easy to stay in that truth when you are, I think when you have really worked on a moral consciousness of right and wrong. And in that moral consciousness of right and wrong, you have to watch how you slide into your opinions. It's hard for me. The death penalty is a hard one for me. There's something that just lives in me that there's an accountability for our action. And this practice is always reminding me that that can go into a view. But I can't get out of that view as long as I don't hold that view as an absolute. And I do. I think many of us do in some areas of about the food we eat. Suzuki Roshi used to... how many of you have heard this story? I think it's used kind of a lot about how when in the early 60s and the microbiotic diet was really going on and sugar was really poison and no meat, only vegetarian, and that was an absolute. And one of the students who's now, of course, my age, maybe even a little bit more, they went out to eat and Suzuki Roshi ordered a hamburger. And a juicy hamburger at that with all the fixings and the trimmings. And the student just kind of sat there and was a little aghast and ordered whatever he ordered. And the order came and Suzuki Roshi just immediately just put the hamburger in front of him, took his order and said, eat it. Right then. or when the sugar thing was going on at Tassajara. For those of you who know Tassajara, we've had more food trips than I think anybody could possibly imagine. It is really an amazing experience to live. I was the Tenzo at Green Gulch for 2 years, and I was kind of just used to feeding a husband and two hungry boys, and they were happy if I cooked them practically anything. They had their preferences. And then I went and learned about what really preferences were. And how passionate people were about their preferences. And then having somewhat of a mother nature in myself, and then trying to work to accommodate those preferences. And then in the middle of that, watching my views arise. And the intolerance and the dread. I would see certain people coming, and that dread was really big. That dread. And then somebody else would come in who would just tell me what a good job I had done and how happy I was to see them, how expanded I was. So, again, all of these levels of the subtleties in my mind has, how I just constantly click with I like it, I don't like it, I don't know if I like it or not. And when I get on that I like it or I don't like it, and those views come in, and the shoulders are tense, the back hurts a little, the knees go to zazen, and you think, what am I doing here? 4:30 in the morning, I'm never going to change, I'm going to be the same old schmuck I've always been. And just by watching that, and community is a great place. Community is a great place to learn that. Now, since most everybody here is somewhere close to my age group, I'll say the change also is when you were with your siblings or your neighbors when we were children. And then when you became the parent or the head of the household, how that role changed and how often you slipped into being ruled by your children with their events in their lives at certain times, and how you had thoughts and ideas about what you should be as a parent, what you should be as an employer, what you should give and provide for your family, and how fixed you were. And I guess I'm here to tell you that I went from a six-figure income into $660 a month. And I watch that decline, and I watch what my life is like now. I really watch what my life is like. And I certainly grew up in that time that you had to provide for yourself when you were older. You had to have those IRAs. You had to have this investment. You had to pay attention to how your investment were, and you better have a good car. I could remember we would say, well, we should change the car at 60,000 miles. Things start to go wrong with a car at 60,000 miles. And now watching just how that's changed for me, watching how the idea of cars have changed, the ideas of things have changed, my views have dropped away on one level, and they're just alive and well on another. And it's based on my concepts of right and wrong, smart or not smart, if I'm saying kind, and if I'm being kind instead of saying stupid, that's an easy one. You're so stupid. How could you be so stupid? Well, this is ridiculous. And then all of a sudden, I can watch how I tighten up. The stomach gets a little tight. The hands don't move as quickly. The anxiety comes in, and most of the time it's because I have a view. I have a view. And when I hold on to that view, I can't help but have a view, but if I hold on to that view, I'm caught. I had a view when I came in here and I was sitting up here. I'm used to everybody. If I sit face out, I have everybody's back. Now I had everybody looking at me, and how was my posture? And I came up here and I sat up here, and all of a sudden I thought, well, am I going to stay here and look, and somebody's going to look up? How's my posture going to be? Is my mood going to be right? And it started going through me, and I thought, put your eyes at 45 degrees and just breathe. Whoever's going to see you is going to see you who they are. If they have concepts about who they think you ought to be, that's their view. But if you buy that view, you're going to just go off into some other realm of suffering. So just sit there and breathe. Don't think right. Don't think wrong. And as a thought arises, just go back to your breath. Very basic. Just go back to your breath. I have had a lot of death in my family lately, something that I feel like is going to be even more prevalent. We had somebody die at City Center yesterday, and we've just had a lot of loss. And logically, I understand that this time in my life, at this age, there's going to be constant loss. My brother-in-law died in a very four weeks. And my sister is the only one who stayed married of the five of us to the same spouse. They've been married 40 years. She never worked. And now she gets to see how it's going to be. And she's not 60, so she can't collect Social Security. So she has to find a job. So she has to step in to another way of living at this time in her life. But he gave me his first job. He gave me my first job. Working in the movie theater, the Lamar Theater in Manhattan Beach, California. And I had a lot of memory. My daughter-in-law's father also died in 5 weeks. There's a lot of loss. And what I found from this practice is wonderful moment, precious moment. That I could drive out in that little Honda today on the way home, and that could be the end. I could be gone. So how am I going to live every moment of my life? And are my views going to be my jailer? Or can I possibly have the possibility of opening up to see my views as a perception, and that there are many perceptions, and there are many ways of looking at things, and my way is just one of them. So I'd like to read you this poem. In passing, how swiftly the strained honey of afternoon light flows into the darkness, and the closed bud shrugs off its special mystery in order to break into blossom. As if what exists, exists so it can be lost and become precious. Shall I read it again? I better put my glasses on. How swiftly the strained honey of afternoon light flows into darkness, and the closed bud shrugs off its special mystery in order to break into blossom. As if what exists, exists so that it can be lost and become precious. Thank you very much. Do we have questions now? We have a few minutes, I think. Gil told me if I talked much over 40 minutes, people left. Tracy?
How do you know? I'm not sure the question. I was just thinking, don't know, it's more like a, there's some resolution rather than it just a fade.
I think sitting practice is one of the important ingredients, and I mean even 5 minute or 8 minute sitting practice is when your views have grabbed you viscerally and or you know just as hard as they can, if there's any possibility of just walking meditation or just sitting, it loosens it up. It just starts loosening it up. I think that's one of the wonderful advantages of either sitting or walking meditation. When you're grabbed by the throat, by the gut, however it comes in, that pain, just to sit and breathe, or walk and breathe, either way. It doesn't become so absolute. It's the absolutes that are the killers, you know, the real danger.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The most history. Well, I invite you to have some time to watch how those views come up throughout the rest of the day. Or yes.
Uh-huh.
Right. Let me read them in order. Right view, right right intention. If I do it, I do it out of order. And there's some... oops, I lost my page. Let's see, it's right. I'm always interested in the order. I'm going through them. He does, it's an interesting way that Thich Nhat Hanh in this book, I hadn't seen this book until yesterday, but he has this diagram of how they, and he wrote it how they flow into one another is the reason I wanted to read it, because we don't necessarily keep them in order, but it's a good idea. Right view, right thinking, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right diligence, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And I think open is, I like the word open. Shall I read it again? Did anybody want to write that down? Okay. Right view, right thinking, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right diligence, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Yes. Well, you can't. You know, that's the thing. That's what I said. You can't get out of your views. We're going to have our views. It's just that there are wholesome views and unwholesome views. And having the Buddhist practice of the eight elements of the path, as I just said, is just a way to work with those views. You know, to watch them and watch how they come in. What is right thinking? I think in every religion, every main religion, the precepts and the Four Noble Truths are there. They're worded differently. I don't know that there's much different in anything if we wholeheartedly step in. I think we're just as caught if we think that Buddhism is an absolute, when in fact the Buddhist teaching says nothing is an absolute, including Buddhism. It's a wisdom, you know, the way our practice is, as again, as I understand it, it is a wisdom path. But there's probably plenty of people that you've known that have walked into that path from a different river. And they've been teachers for all of us. But usually, the best teacher is your enemy. Or the one who annoys you, the neighbor who annoys you the most, whether it's in your office next door or your neighborhood. Because you have that reaction. You have that reaction. You have that aversion. If you have an aversion to their opinion, you're held on to the view. But you can see it as a view that you don't ascribe to. That's okay. It's not, you know, check it out. It's a good thing to check out when you're listening to that information. Yes. I would have put that a little, thank you. And I would have said, for years ago, I would have said, goals and objectives are my life. I mean, I am a very goal-oriented person. And goals are, and objectives are just a strong part of my constitution. But I have missed out a lot of the process along the way to get to the goals and objectives because that's all I could see was getting to that. And I think careers do that to us sometimes through the early years when we're trying to get the promotion so we can get this and that. And, you know, and then we're going to get to the next step and we're going to get to the next step. And all of a sudden we might be at the step, but what happened along the way? We're 55 years old. How did this happen? You know, and smelling the roses was a little annoying. I was a little impatient for those things. It was like, okay, great. Now, I can't believe I'm going to say this, that it's me, and I love, the birds are so, I don't know about down here, but we have just an unbelievable amount of birds this year. Some of it is our marshlands are coming back into Green Gulch in some of the fields, but I can't give you all the names of them, but in my front yard I have like five nests of robins and the redhead, anyway, it's a type of a sparrow-looking bird, but it's not. Anyway, the sounds of the birds have been just wonderful for me, just to be able to listen to that. And I noticed I would have been very distracted by all the cracks and the creaks in the building for years. And when I heard them in the first sitting, I thought, oh, listen, the cracks are there. Nothing. You know? It's kind of nice. I mean, I must admit that while I've gained nothing, I've gained a lot. I am the same old schmuck I've always been. That's Lama Suridas said that one time in a talk. He went home to stay with his brother. And they were having a family reunion, and his brother was... they had been together like 3 days, and he turned around and he said, Jeffrey, you're just the same old schmuck you've always been. And you're supposed to be... He was one of the first ones ordained as a lama in the Tibetan tradition. And it was so great because I think of that all the time. I'm the same old schmuck I've always been. And I'm not that person either. You know, there's something really helpful about that, because now I might look at the boulders as a beautiful formation of nature. Instead of saying, how do I get around it? Let's see. I can strategize this way and I can do this. And maybe I'll even lie up on top of the boulder now. You know. But crossing the river was a big part of my life for a lot of years. Getting to that other side. We really have a lot of that in the Western world. That's a big part. Okay. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful, beautiful Sunday down here. It's gorgeous here. Just beautiful. This is Portola Valley, right? Mm-hmm.